Good evening, everyone. I'm Pam Sack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, we continue Female Crime Fiction Writers Month for Nasty Women January, and my guest is dear friend Deborah Koontz, who is so bloody talented and writes in four genres. I thought it was three. It's four. You're going to love it. Stay tuned. Be right back. Everyone, to continue our series on female crime fiction writers this month. I love the fact that most of the authors that I speak to all have a long and interesting history of other jobs or day jobs before they finally figure out that they're meant to be writers. So Deborah Koontz, who has been writing for a while now, has also done it all. She was a business owner, she was an accountant, she was a pilot, a flight instructor, a lawyer, and we laugh because worse, she was a tax lawyer. And she finally made it to writer. So true to form, she also, thusly, in the years that I've known her, has lived in a bunch of different places. So most likely when someone says, well, where do you live now? And she tells everyone, on Southwest Airlines, third row, window seat, either side, either aisle. And I love that because it's true. She's on the go all the time. But I'm thrilled that she stopped long enough to join me on the show. Please welcome, not only is she a thriller writer, she writes kind of a funky adventure series called The Lucky O'Toole Las Vegas Adventure. She also writes a women's fiction series of The Heart of Napa. And she is coming out with a romantic suspense book, the very talented Deborah Koontz. Deb, welcome back to Authors on the Air.
Well, thanks, Pam. I'm delighted to be here. It's always such fun to talk to you, and I love talking about mysteries.
I'm telling you, I'm thrilled that you've I knew you were always going to switch over. You've always said I have a great interest in writing in other genres. Now, Lucky O'Toole is your adventure series about a woman who is in charge of the customer service in a big, the premier casino and hotel on the Vegas Strip. She's tons of fun. You're hysterically funny, and I can see where your own personality is imbued into Lucky O'Toole. The most recent book, Lucky the Hard Way, is which book number, which novel number, not novella, but novel number?
That was number 7.
So Lucky the Hard Way, I love it because even though it's not meant as a mystery, there is a mystery every time. And this one kind of carried over from the last book. So congratulations on this book. I loved it, of course. How can you not love Lucky and her French chef fiancé? And Teddy, the ex, who was her first really true love, and her mom and everything else. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. When I first started out writing, I wrote Want to Get Lucky, I thought it was the only good story I would ever have. And I can't, back then I couldn't imagine writing 7 lucky stories and 5 in between the book novellas, and then having all of these other ideas to write in different genres and to go play in different universes. And I probably should have seen it just with my peripatetic life, but I am just so thrilled to have Lucky continue, and I love writing her stories. And this time I took her to China. I had always written all the other Lucky stories are in Vegas. And I always thought Vegas was sort of Lucky Shangri-La, and if she left, she would cease to be Lucky. But I got really intrigued with the idea of Macau. And Macau is a huge gambling center, just like Vegas, or very similar to Vegas, but mainly the Eastern populations travel there, not many Western populations. And so it's very different vibe. And actually, some of the companies, the big players in Vegas, have properties in Macau, like Steve Wynn and Sheldon Adelson at Sands Corporation. And, you know, they have huge hotels in Macau. And I thought, well, I really need to go see this. This is really part of Vegas. And it's a very important financial part for those corporations. And especially as Vegas has sort of changed a little bit from the way it used to be, the Macau operations mm-hmm. have become really important. And so I thought, well, let's go play. You know, let's put Lucky in Macau and see how this works and how she functions in an environment that is sort of the same but very different rules. And so I had a great time. I went to Macau and to Hong Kong, and who doesn't have fun in Hong Kong? And so I let Lucky loose in those cities, and I had a great time. The book's selling well. It's been well received by Lucky readers, so yay for that. That's always scary.
Absolutely. And although I have to tell you, knowing you the way I do, you could have fun in a yurt. Let's be serious. So
absolutely.
I just know you. And every time we've seen each other, we've had a good time. So, yes.
Of course.
I'm so glad. I adore the Lucky series. I look forward to reading Lucky so much. And I kind of... There are scenes where I'm thinking, oh, no, please don't go back to Teddy. Oh, yes. Oh, no, you and Teddy belong together. Oh, Lucky, what are you doing? You know, and I kind of, my shoulders are up under my ears and my eyes are squeezed closed, and I'm thinking, no. I can just see the handwriting on the wall. But then again, you always surprise me. It's never the ending that I expect it to be. And the way she has such good friends. I know she thinks she's doing this on her own, but she never does. She never goes
never.
Through these little
yeah.
trials and tribulations by herself. And you have created an absolutely glorious cast of characters with Lucky. It is truly an ensemble type of book, as it were.
It is so much fun to write.
I would imagine.
Can I share what?
Would you share with listeners the characters and who they are and their names and, you know, what they do? Let's talk a little bit about that, because this is such a character-driven series. Yes, the adventures
right.
are tons of fun, but if you didn't know who her sidekicks are, and there are plentiful, and who the players are, it wouldn't be near as much fun. So let's talk about her office staff first and go from
okay,
there.
Her right-hand man is Miss P, and we never know her first name. And, in fact, I'm not sure.
Right.
Lucky knows it, but she never tells anybody what it is. And Miss P
right.
grew up on a farm in Iowa, and she was a deadhead and followed the Grateful Dead around. And now she's very prim and proper, and yet she's married to Las Vegas's premier private investigator, who's Australian, the beautiful Jeremy Whitlock, who is 15 years her junior. And, of course, I had fun playing with that because I'm more Miss P's age, and the idea of somebody like the beautiful Jeremy Whitlock was intriguing, let me put it that way.
Absolutely.
And,
well,
so,
and by the by,
yeah.
excuse me for interrupting, but I have to say, whenever this character is introduced, he is introduced as the beautiful Jeremy Whitlock. You have to understand
right.
that he's stunningly, amazingly good-looking, and is so attracted to Miss P, it was a thrill to read about their pairing, which didn't happen
well,
right
it was
away.
Just,
it was,
no, it didn't. No, and it was just great. But he's delightful. I mean, he's sort of the cliche guy, you know, that everybody wants, but he's not quite as perfect as Lucky thinks he is. And I got his name actually from a trip to London, and I was meeting with a publisher in London, and he kept referring to a colleague as the beautiful so-and-so. And it was like a joke, an inside joke. And so when I decided to write Jeremy Whitlock, I thought, well, Jeremy Whitlock is sort of boring. I mean, it's a nice name, but it's just a name. And I thought, well, let's call him the beautiful Jeremy Whitlock. And he, of course, is oblivious. And so it's fun. And he's a really nice guy. And then the youngest person in Lucky's office is Brandy, and she was a dancer and a stripper, and she's young and beautiful, and Lucky has taken her under her wing, and she's very competent. And she has a thing for the young detective that Lucky is also mentoring, Detective Romeo. And he's actually, right now, he's my favorite character. I go back and forth, you know, on who I like the best.
I like
and
him
I always
too.
Love Lucky.
Because Detective Romeo can definitely have his own novella because he's intriguing. He's learned. I love the fact that you say Lucky's mentoring him because really she is doing just that. She is teaching the detective how to be a detective, and I love it. It's so much fun.
Right. In the last book, he came into his own in the last book.
Yes.
And Lucky's really realizing that, oh, you know, he's not the student and she's not the teacher anymore, and they're more colleagues. And I like that. And eventually he will actually have his own major storyline, I think, in a Lucky book. And because we don't know that much about him. In fact, we don't know anything about him.
We don't know anything about him because we met him when he was a newbie. And now he's not a newbie anymore.
Yeah, but we don't know where he came from. We don't know his family.
Right.
We don't know any skeletons in his closet, which are always fun to, you know, pull out and jangle. And, in fact, the book that I'm writing now is the next Lucky book. It's called Lucky Ride. And the National Finals Rodeo is in town. And this book is actually Mona's book. And Mona is Lucky's mother, who is she's a retired hooker from Pahrump, Nevada, which is one of the closest place to Las Vegas where technically whorehouses are and prostitution is legal. And she had a whorehouse in Pahrump, and that's where Lucky was raised until she was 15. And Mona is one of those people that is pushy and aggressive and beautiful, and is always doing the wrong thing for the right reason. And somehow it all turns out in the end, but she drives Lucky nuts. And so this book is actually Mona's story. And I think everybody's really going to like it. We're going to find out why Lucky is named Lucky. We don't know that. And where O'Toole came from, because that's not her mother's last name. It's not her father's last name. And and we're going to find out there's a whole big story there, and it's going to be fun.
I love that. How fun. Well, congratulations on the success of that. I want to let everybody know, Deb and I are taking your calls. Please feel free to call in and say hello. The number is 347-633-9609. You also wrote the first book in the Heart of Napa series, which is women's fiction, and the first book is called Crushed, which it was a very enjoyable book. And you poor thing, you had to struggle and do hands-on research and live in a cottage in Napa Valley and go to all the wineries and just – what a struggle for you. The things you do for your art, congratulations. I'm not crying for you, Argentina, at all, okay? You surprised me, and you dropped me a note, and you said, okay, here's my new book after me. And even though we always talked about you wanting to change genres and try everything, which is, as you said, kind of, you know, it's a metaphor for your life, no doubt about it. You've tried everything you've been interested in and have excelled at all of those different things. After Me is so completely different from anything that you've written, and it's so completely different from anything I've ever read. Will you tell listeners about After Me, please?
Oh, I will do my best. This is a story that just wouldn't leave me alone. And I fell in love with two things. The idea of stem cell research as a cure for Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and ALS. And, I mean, stem cells, I just read an article today, can be a cure for a lot of other things. But that seemed to be my focus.
I have a friend getting stem cell treatment today as we speak, who has gone
right.
to...
Right. I mean, it's amazing stuff.
California.
And
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And then coupled with that, I got intrigued with the idea of how we store memories. And I believe it was a team at Stanford recently, sometime in the fall of last year, came out with a paper where they proved that really traumatic events in one's life actually alters your DNA. And yeah. So it's a way that the memory is stored, not in your brain where we think it is stored, but they're stored everywhere in your body. And, of course, there's been tons of anecdotal evidence over the years of higher-level organ transplants, the donees having proclivities or aptitudes that can be traced back to the donor. And so some just weird stuff. And so I got interested in all of this. And so I thought, well, I really want to create a thriller. And as writers do, you know, the first question you say is, what if?
What if?
So what if a young woman who had been a deep undercover cop in New York got badly injured in a bus that went bad, $20 million worth of diamonds went missing in the bus. Nobody knows where they are. Everybody wants them, of course. And she's in witness protection program in Portland, Oregon. And coupled with all of that, she has a genetic predisposition to early onset Alzheimer's. Now, that sounds a little trite. Okay, the diamonds went missing and she can't remember where they are. Okay, but that's not what this story is. And,
no, it's not. That's just the prologue. It's nothing to do with the story.
That's just the setup. Yeah, that's just the setup. And so she comes home one day. She's fairly functional in her Alzheimer's. She's in this stem cell treatment program in Portland, and it's working, you know, but in bits and pieces. She, you know, her brain, her memory is still a bit like Swiss cheese. And she comes home to her condo, and she finds a dead man in her bathtub with a note in his pocket that says, "I know what you've done." And that's great that somebody knows what she's done, because she doesn't. And so people around her start dying, and bad things happen, and she has to solve the mystery. And what did she do? And she doesn't remember, and she's worried that she did something horrible. And so she's very conflicted, you know, about whether she really wants to know what she did or not. And so it's a big chase book, but it's also a redemption book. And it's, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's crazy. It's just a ton of fun. It's gotten great, great reviews and great blurbs from the likes of Lisa Gardner and Allison Brennan and Hank Phillippe Ryan and Deborah Webb and Barbara Freethy. And, I mean, just amazing. Vicki Pedersen. And, I mean, just amazing people. And it's getting really great reader reviews. So I hope it finds some traction. It's my favorite book right now. I'm really proud of the book. I think I became a better writer.
And I will tell you what I liked about this book so much is because the character is so unlike any other character that I've ever read. Now, you've thrown a lot at her, but not – any more than a lot of other people haven't gone through. I think that these are things that can actually happen to an everyday person who has early onset Alzheimer's, who could have been victimized in some way or done something and not even remember it. The thing that makes her so unique, in my opinion, is the way she tries to remember. Is a very unique little trait where she writes with a Sharpie on her body to remember important things. And
she
also
does,
sends messages in her cell phone. So
right.
I think that's fascinating because as a caregiver for my mom for many, many years when she was declining and her mental status was declining, I wrote notes all over the place for her. I didn't write on her arms.
Right.
I did not mark my mom a Sharpie. But I would go in every day and say, good morning, today is such and such a day. It's Monday. Today is the, here's the date. It's the year. This is what you're having for breakfast. This is what we're doing for the rest of the morning. And then in the afternoon, we'd put up another note or maybe just have everything laid out for the day. Her clothes were already organized, and I'd say, remember to put your shoes on. And then if we were going someplace, she would sit in the back of the minivan, and I'd always have a note saying, this is where we're going. We should be there at such and such a time. Look at your watch. Because otherwise she'd ask
right.
over and over and over and over again. And that's hard on a caregiver, the repetition. And it's hard on the person who is inflicted with a memory deficit. So it was fascinating
right.
to me what you did for her, what she did to herself in her attempt to remember. And so
yeah, and
I
she didn't have a caregiver,
her.
You know.
Right.
Yeah, she didn't have
but
a caregiver.
Right,
she's in witness protection program.
She was not, yeah, she was physically not failing. It was
right.
her mind that she was doing battle with. And her caregiver actually was her WITSEC officer, interestingly
right.
enough.
Right. Right.
And her doctor that she cherished.
Right.
So
I
love this story, Deborah. Your threads of this story wove together so well. And in the end, it just was a stunning revelation. A couple of them, I have to say. Because it wasn't just one.
Oh, that's
there were
great.
A lot of little.
Yay.
Yeah, there were a lot of little twists and turns through there. Yeah.
Yeah,
right?
There were. And it was, I will tell you, it was the hardest book I have ever even thought about writing. And I had to put it aside. I put it aside for about 6 months and wrote Deep Water, which is the one that's coming out in March. Totally different book. But I had to put it aside because I didn't know how to tell the story. How do you write a story? Because it's told in the first person. So you're in this
right.
woman's head. And I was like, oh, you know, there were so many things to think through about what she remembered, what she didn't remember, how she remembers it, how does it come at her, you know, how. And then, of course, there's a twist in the middle of the book where she starts having memories that she finally gets the inkling that they're not her own. And so
and
that's
that
where.
And that's fascinating, too. There you go. There's
and
stem
so,
cell for
and,
you. And there's where your
and
anecdotal
so, I mean,
story.
Yeah, you're
in.
Not yourself
right.
anymore. You know, you get stem
right.
cells from somebody
right.
else, which she had to do because her stem cells would have had the genetic fault for the Alzheimer's. And so she had to get stem
right.
cells from someone else. And so which
is
tied in with the whole mystery. But it was
yes,
it was
did.
Great
it was
fun.
Wonderful.
I went to the World Stem Cell Conference. I went, you know, and talked to fascinating people. And I will tell you, the stuff that is going on in medicine today and biotechnology is awe-inspiring. I mean, it's just, and there's going to be another Kate book. There is going to be a sequel to After Me. And I stumbled
I
upon
that.
Something really, really amazing. And I didn't think that there would be a sequel to After Me, but there is. So, and I sort of have to
I
tie
wanna,
up her personal life.
I know that you took a long time to write this book because I remember talking to you
mm-hmm.
about it. And I also know that you know Lucky and that you're so creative with Lucky. I think part of Lucky books are the titles. And Lucky, it just lends itself to a really feel-good, fun, exciting, sexy, sassy storytelling. But After Me was a totally different animal for you, and even more than the Heart of Napa book. So when you finally did all your research, is that when you sat down, or did you research and write at the same time? What was the process for you?
Well, I'll tell you, I had the basic, you know, sort of cool ideas probably 5 years ago.
Right.
And
Right.
And technology and scientific discovery had not caught up with my what if. And I didn't want to write a book that was so far outside the realm of possibility at that point in time that people just rolled their eyes and went, yeah, right. Well, now it's all possible. Everything I postulated in the book is possible. And I'll tell you what happened was I started the book about three times, and I just couldn't figure out how to tell the story. And so I went every year, I go to a writer's retreat or a conference or something to try and add more tools to my toolbox and learn something new and listen to people's, you know, approach to writing and that sort of thing. And I went to a three-day seminar in Charleston, South Carolina with Donald Moss, Christopher Vogler, and James Scott Bell. And it was fabulous.
Wow.
And I was just so energized and just, you know, just got me thinking on all different tracks that I signed up for Donald Moss, I think probably twice a year, maybe once, I can't remember, but he does a week-long intensive course called Writing the Breakout Novel. And, you know, that sounds really hokey, but, you know, you learn so much from people who have studied novels and have been in the business for so long, and they have such interesting perspective on what makes a really good story. And so I attended his 7-day thing in Hood River, Oregon. I think it was last year. And was it last year or the year before? Anyway, and it just, that was where I finally, with his help, you know, a little bit, we sat down and we just sort of focused on how to tell the story. And quite frankly, I was afraid of telling such a dark story because I write lucky. You know, I write lucky books.
Right.
There's nothing dark about lucky books.
No, there isn't.
You may have a moment of angst, but it is not dark. And, you know,
even when there's a murder, it's not dark.
Right. It's usually funny in a way. And Dawn kept saying, you know, you got to go darker, you got to go darker, you got to go darker. And I was like, oh, I don't want to. And he was absolutely right. And so he pushed me to just get really dark with it. And that was exactly how the story needed to be told. And then I had to figure out a setting. And I thought, well, I want winter in Portland, Oregon. You know, it's evocative, it's dark. And so I went to Portland, Oregon and spent some time wandering around trying to figure out how this character, you know, would operate in Portland. And I fell in love with Portland. What a fabulous city. And
that's what I hear.
So, you know, that's sort of how the book came together. And I, you know, for writers, I'm telling you, I went to this week-long thing and some of the writers there would come up to me and say, well, tell us about yourself. And I'd sort of tell them about my publishing history and having been traditionally published and, you know, all of that by Macmillan and all of that. And they're like, well, why are you here? You know, you're done. And I was like, that's the point. You're never done. You are never, ever done.
Be.
You need to get better.
Right.
The next book
I write has to be better than the last one. Yeah,
I
can't imagine anyone saying that because unless you've retired from writing because you've gone blind, crippling, crazy and couldn't write anymore, why would you ever stop and why wouldn't you? It's incongruent to me to think about that. As a writer, you always learn, don't you? Don't you learn when you look back?
You hope to.
When you look at your first book, even though Want to Get Lucky was such a slam bang, best-selling book, it was so wonderful, everybody loved it. Do you ever think I could have written that differently and it would have been better, knowing what you know now?
I could have written it tighter. You know, I definitely could have tightened it up and made it, you know, sort of read a little bit better. Although it reached just fine, but
it does
read
fine. I have to tell you, it's a good. But I think every author thinks that. Now I know other authors who've taken that particular class from Don Moss and absolutely love it, and have sworn by it.
Yeah.
So good for you for doing that. And for my feeling is if you go to a class like that and you get one gem that changes everything, then it's worth its weight in gold. Whatever you've paid, you've now gotten paid back triple. But it sounds you got way so much more than that, that you got way more. And, you know, good for you.
I did. And he really helped me, you know, he helped me find my courage as a writer to to write things that scare me, which is what you hear a writer should do all the time, is write things that scare you. And I think I'd gotten so comfortable with Lucky and felt so easy in her world that anything else seemed to scare me, especially something that was antithetical to Lucky.
And your world, right. Right.
Yeah, it's my world. It's totally different. And that's sort of where all the different genres came from, I think. I got so intrigued with figuring out how to tell these stories, because there are different expectations for thrillers in a reader's mind. There are different expectations for romantic suspense. There are different expectations for a light,
yes,
romantic comedic mystery like Lucky. You know, there are different expectations for women's fiction. You know, it's all different. And so I thought, well, I want to learn how to function in that set of expectations and see if I can do it. And, you know, the Deep Water that's coming out in March is a straight, normal romantic suspense / action adventure. You know, it's told from the third person. This is, you know, one of my first books in the third person, and there's multiple points of view, and there's bad guys, and there's, you know, deep water drilling in the Gulf of Mexico and helicopter pilots, and, you know, and it's great fun. And it's just a big, big, big book. And as opposed to After Me, which is actually a relatively tight, you know, a tight camera shot kind of book. You know, it really focused
on
the main character.
And I will say from a reader standpoint about After Me that I like the fact that your chapters are not overly long, because I think as a reader, I know I need a break at the end of a chapter, because you keep the suspense ratcheted up in this book. Really do. There's not a time when you ever can kick back and say, oh, thank God I have a chapter to relax and get ready for the next onslaught. It doesn't work like that. And I'm glad you didn't do that. I think it's a cheater way out. This way, when I read After Me, every single chapter was tight, and it wound me up the same way. And I had that little breather at the end of the chapter, knowing that I could take the deep breath and get ready for the next part, the next chapter. And I think that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, that's the way it's supposed to
be. Well, but you're
a
real thriller reader. You know, you like that.
Yeah,
you like, you know, you're a real thriller reader, and I like that too. And so all of my Lucky and After Me and Deep Water, I mean, Deep Water has 50-something chapters. Some of the chapters in there are a page or two long. And so, I mean, you were jumping back and forth between people and you know, I mean, the James Patterson style of, you know.
But I think a lot of writers are doing shorter chapters anymore these days. I want a break. Occasionally, if I have to get up and make lunch or go to the bathroom or send out social media, I don't want to stop in the middle of a chapter. So writing smaller chapters, just from a pragmatic standpoint of view, a reader's standpoint of view, makes sense to me. Give me a break. Let me stick my finger in the page or turn the book over or put a marker in there and say, okay, I can absorb what I've read. I don't have to stop in the middle of the chapter, so I'm not missing out on the connected action or the connected dialogue or whatever the connected narrative is for that chapter. But by the same token, just as I told you how I was impacted by After Me, and I told you how Lucky impacts me, I squeeze my eyes and I think, oh, God, what's next? And it's kind of with a grin on my face because I know I'm going to love it. So when I read Crush from your Heart of Napa series, it was the same thing. It was like, oh my God, oh my God. And so the reaction is always there because I think you're such a terrific, talented writer. And I think you have fun writing your books too, Dub. I may be wrong, but
I have the best job ever. The best job ever.
Yeah, no,
I mean, I get up in the morning and I go. It's like, oh, my God, this is just going to be so much fun. What's going to happen today? And, you know, I sat down a while ago to really sort of flesh out the next Lucky book. I knew sort of the venue and, you know, all the character arcs. You know, in the Lucky books, the characters change. They grow. And
yes.
So I have to remember, you know, where they are in their growth and what their particular situation is at the moment, and which isn't that hard because they're all my friends. And
now they're your best friends, another day.
Yeah. But, you know, and it was just, it was so much fun to sit down and all of a sudden have the story just unfold in front of me. You know, and it was like, I can't believe I get to do this for a living. I mean, it's just overwhelming some days. You know, it's just so much
listen,
fun.
You think you have the best job. I have the best job. I mean,
well,
I get
glad
to talk to famous
way.
People who write books. I mean, and I get to read books all day long. I get to read great books. So I think I have the best job. So, you know, we'll have to agree to disagree on that one. I want to talk about Deepwater. What?
Okay.
What?
I said we will argue about this over a bottle of wine.
Yes, we will.
So.
We absolutely will. which does sound like us. So yes, we will.
It does.
I want to talk about Deepwater because I came late to romance in my love of reading. My romance reading probably only started, you know, 10, 11, 12 years ago. And I really love well-written romance. And whether it's contemporary, whether it's humorous, whether it's romantic suspense, I will honestly say the only thing I don't like is historical. So anything historical. I can't get into it. I want it to relate to me in some way. You know, I want to relate in some way. But anyway.
Right. I'm sort of the same way. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I love the publishers who send me the books. I'm glad to give away all the historical romance that I get because I just am never going to read it. But having said that,
some
romantic
of it's fabulous,
suspense for
but,
me.
But, you know, it's what, yeah.
You know, I'm like, go move the story forward. I don't want to go back. You know, I'm thinking, I know there's a lot of, it never has appealed to me, and maybe it's because I've not read the actual right book for me, but regardless, romantic suspense is my favorite genre in the romances. So
right.
You have now created a female helicopter pilot, which doesn't surprise
mm-hmm.
me because you are indeed a pilot yourself, not of helicopters.
I am.
And a flight.
I am.
And a flight instructor. Do you fly helicopters also?
Yes. I have
you
hours
do? I didn't know that.
In helicopters, yeah. But I don't have
I
a helicopter rating, no.
Okay. But because I know you can fly all kinds of airplanes, I know that, jets and everything. And I know you're a flight instructor too. But it doesn't surprise me because, gee, you're such an overachiever. Jeez, God. So you decided
no.
on romantic suspense.
I just can't
so
decide
next...
what to do.
Well, no,
no,
I think you've decided what to do, but you've now,
yes.
You're dipping your toes in all the different genres, and I love that about you because you're brave. You're really brave, Deb. And I think I remember a conversation you and I had when we first met, and you said, I said, oh, my God, a tax lawyer, why did you do that? And you said, well, I had to do something to make money so that I could support my child. I remember you saying that to me, and I thought, how brave of you. And I think that carries through with your career as a writer, too, because here you are now going into the fourth genre, which is romantic suspense. What drew you to this particular story? What was your what-if moment for this one?
Well, this is actually one of those circling back things. So back in about 2007, I was in a
uh-huh.
critique group with Barb Nicholas, who you interviewed last night, who's one
yes.
of my best friends.
Yes.
Yeah,
I love
she's
her.
Been one of my best friends forever. Oh, yeah, she's fabulous.
I should have known that because
it's amazing.
It is amazing. I should have known that because she, like you, is an adventurer. I mean, she's tried it all, too. If I had only known that. She's delightful. She really is.
Yeah, yeah. We've been best friends forever. And so we met in this critique group. No, we met slightly
uh-huh.
before that, and then I was invited into the critique group. And so I was sort of casting around for something to write, and I wrote, oh, the first couple of chapters of Want to Get Lucky, and then I wrote a couple of chapters of this helicopter pilot book, you know, set down in Ellington Field, south of Houston, and the Gulf of Mexico, and deep water, you know, oil rigs and all of that. Handsome Coast Guard commanders and whatnot. And I presented it to the critique group, and I said, which book should I write? And so they took the chapters away and they read them, and then we came back the next week and they said, well, you know, we really like both of them. You know, they're really great ideas and they're both well done. And, you know, but maybe you ought to write Vegas, because Vegas, you know, people aren't writing Vegas right now. And I thought, oh, yeah, well, they're writing female helicopter pilots in Houston, but okay. And so I wrote Want to Get Lucky. That was the book, was Want to Get Lucky, that came out of that. But then I still had these chapters and this idea for this helicopter pilot. And I always really liked it. And it was, the story as I envisioned it 10 years ago was not quite the story as well rendered as the story ended up being now, I hope, or as fully fleshed out. Anyway, let me put it that way. Whether it was well rendered or not is up to the people who read it to tell me whether they like it or not. But when I was having trouble with After Me, and I just had gotten sort of mired in not really knowing how to tell the story, I went back and I picked up, you know, the helicopter pilot story and said, well, let's see what's there. You know, let's play with this. And I love to fly. I have a real passion about flying. I think it's just a trip and a half. And it was one of those empowerment things for me. It was something that I never think that I can't do anything, which is scary. I mean, with enough energy and effort, I figure I can sort of muck my way through, you know, most anything that I would be stupid enough to tackle.
I wish my listeners could visualize you too, Deb, because listeners, just let me tell you, Deb is this petite woman who's not particularly tall, but she's not particularly short, but you would not believe how tiny she is. And imagine her behind the controls of these massive jets and helicopters and doing all the things that she loves, at fly fishing and all the traveling and the hiking and all of these things. That's why I said I think you're brave. You are one of the bravest women I know, and God bless you for it. I think it's amazing.
So I am not brave.
Yes, you are, because you've said yes, you are.
Life is about the adventure, Pam. Yeah.
Well, that I agree. But see, you had a very secure thing being your accountant and your business and your tax lawyering and all, and you said, screw that. I'm tossing it all the wind. I want to be a writer. And I love that. That's
I know my family about had a cow.
Well, I'm sure
my
they
family
did,
went,
but,
what?
You know. Well,
you know,
in your
I don't live inside the box.
No,
I don't live inside the box.
Your box is so big that you can still go in all four corners and have plenty of room. That's what I like to think.
You know, I just have a short attention span. That's all there is. You know, I came across a TED Talk, seriously. And I think the gal's name is Ellie Wampler or something like that. And I want to say it was a Portland TEDx talk or something. But she did 12 minutes on me. And all of a sudden I was, and not literally, but I'm listening to the TED Talk going, oh, that's me. That is exactly me. And it's called, I mean, she walks out on stage and she said, when was the first time that you were asked what you wanted to be when you grew up? You know, and she goes into this whole thing, and she's a psychologist, and she goes into this whole thing about there's two different main big divergence in how people sort of handle the world. And there are people that know that they want to be a doctor or a computer software person or a writer or whatever, and they have a passion for it, and they learn everything there is to know about it, and they dive deep, 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 and that is all they ever do. That is their thing. And then
That's
there's people
me.
Like me who go,
right.
huh, you know, I want to – I want to learn how an airplane flies. You know, and so you go and you throw yourself into it and you learn how an airplane flies and you start off being, you know, a baby pilot, and pretty soon, you know, you put so much energy and time into it. You're a flight instructor and you're flying all over the country and you're learning all that, meeting all these fabulous people. And then you go, huh, well, I've sort of done that. Now, now I want to go learn about
I can see how Barbara would be,
you know?
I can see how you and Barbara would be best friends. It makes total sense to me now. It really does.
I
said to her when we were talking last night, I said, oh, my God, we were separated at birth because we liked all the same authors. We liked all the same adventures, although I will not hike Mount Kilimanjaro in the snow. And it was so
she
much
will.
Fun talking
she
to
her. She will.
No, she did. She was telling me that's on her bucket list for sure. And
it is totally
so
on her bucket list.
Yeah, so we had a really great time talking about that stuff, and now I can see how you two are perfectly suited as friends. I am the same way in that my parents were very encouraging to me. When I said, oh, I want to go try this, my father would say, okay, Ruth, give her the money to go do that. And he said, that's my mom. And off I went, doing whatever little thing struck my fancy, because, you know, I started off as a geriatric rehab therapist, so here I am doing a radio talk show. How does that connect?
Sure.
It? It's not. And then all the things in between, and I have two brothers who have always done the same thing and worked for the same place, in the same spot. They've
right.
never changed.
I would die.
Like my
I
dad.
Would die if I had to do that.
Well,
I would be done. I would just be done. But mine came from a different thing. My parents,
that.
I grew you know, I grew up in the last gasp of the Donna Reed era in the South. And
right.
so you can imagine, you know, my mother was more concerned with my manners and my comportment and whether I knew all the right China
right.
patterns and silver patterns and whether I would make somebody a good
of
wife.
Course.
Which, of course, the answer to that was no. But, you know, and so people would tell me, you know, you can't do that. Oh, you can't do that. You can't do
that's
that.
That's like throwing down the gauntlet, isn't it?
I would go, watch
oh, yeah,
me.
I can.
You know, just,
right.
oh, yes, I can do that. You know, oh, yes, I can.
Absolutely.
And so,
that's,
you know,
that's
I probably,
like the,
that's
the
very immature on my part, but
bowl.
I'm still doing it. Yeah, I mean, I'm,
yeah, but,
you know, it's sort
what
of immature.
A fun life.
But
what a fun life.
Been,
what a fun life.
It's been crazy,
I see you
crazy,
sticking
crazy,
around
crazy,
with the writing thing.
Crazy.
I see you sticking around
it's
with
a,
the writing thing for a while, though.
Oh, totally.
So,
I don't know how.
Yeah.
I don't know how I could not tell stories. You know, it just, I am so fascinated with people. And all of my books actually have relationships in them. Some are built around,
yes.
books are built around the relationships. Others, they're just part of the story. But I'm fascinated with that, you know, the whole male-female, you know, dynamic. And I haven't quite tackled, you know, same-gender love because that's not my experience. So it would be difficult for me to write it. But, you know, I
yes, but you've never
I
been a casino boss either. And
it.
So I think that
that's
somehow
true.
That's not ever going to stop you because you've not ever been a casino boss and you are not suffering with early onset Alzheimer's, so far as I know. And maybe
yes,
you
not
are
that we've
some,
established.
So. That's right. So
there
not
are days.
That, not that I have any, right, I don't have any medical papers proving it. So we're almost out of time. I'm so disappointed because I want to talk to you more and more and more. You know, I love it when you come on the show. Come back again, will you? Come back when Deep
Anytime.
As a matter of fact,
anytime.
Come and pick an author from all these fabulous women who are going to be here this month and come on and join me and just kind of take over and run the show. I mean, you know everybody.
Oh,
there's
that'd
no
be a
reason
blast.
Why you shouldn't. Yeah, go on.
You know, that's
the
best. That is the best thing about writing, though. I will tell you, the best thing about writing is all of the incredible people that I have met. And
can
all
I tell
of the
you that
the
best thing about
stories.
Reading is, too? The,
sure.
As a reader?
Sure.
That is the best thing to me. And that I go to these conferences that most readers don't go to, and I get accepted along with everybody else just blows me away. It's mind-boggling to me that people are so accepting and that my
celebrities are writers, and you know, I know you guys. It's, to me, it's just amazing. I think I'm the luckiest girl in the world. I really do.
But if you think about it, you know, stories that bind us all together, we're all a little bit of a misfit. You know, writers, readers, everybody
yes.
that is, you know, embroiled
yes.
in storytelling. And yes. we all, you know, are so welcoming. And so it's so great to find your tribe.
Yes.
You know, it's fabulous.
Yes. Oh, I know. Somebody said that to me the other day. They said, oh, you found your tribe. And I never thought about it like that because I'm not a writer. But interestingly enough, you know, I'm the producer of this network. There are 14 shows. I'm the only one who's not an author. And there are some award-winning authors who host shows in this network. And I keep forgetting that, yeah, I do have a tribe. I have my author friends and the ones that I've met in person, like you and I, who've known each other for years now, and, you know, the hosts in here. So it's really exciting for me, I will tell you. Thanks for being here.
But think about it. But let me wait one more point, and then I'll go.
Yes.
But I couldn't do what I do, and the writer friends of yours couldn't do what they do without you, you know, and without people like you. If there aren't readers,
yeah.
there aren't writers. And so,
yeah,
you know, we're two sides to it.
Yeah, I'm one of those sick kind of readers, you know. I blow through 400 books a year. So, you're writing them, and look at how many you're writing. You mean you're coming out? You've come out now in the past year with how many books? You've got, I don't know, four full-length novels and novellas. I mean, you're as prolific as anybody I know, and damn good at it too. So, kudos to you, friend. And besides
you
go places and you do things and you have an interesting life. You're a great mom. And so, you know, you're not putting anything on a shelf. That's for sure, Deb.
Deborah Coon, for sure.
Go and get her books. I urge you to go and read After Me. You're going to love it. Of course, who can't love Lucky O'Toole? The newest one is Lucky the Hard Way. Her book, Crushed, is part of the Heart of Napa series. You can find that on Amazon also. And then coming out in March is Deepwater, the romantic suspense book about the female helicopter pilot. I'm telling you, there's a little bit of Deb in every single book that you will read by her, and it's so worth it, and it's so glorious. Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, and you and I will talk again soon, yeah? Pick an author, come and interview.
Course.
Yeah. So my next author for, and that'll be tomorrow night, I am going to be talking to Rebecca Forster, who is also a best-selling author of thrillers. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And then isn't she wonderful? And then I'll speak to thriller novelist Pamela Callow, who is also a great writer. Thank you for being with me, Deb. You know I'm crazy about you. I can't wait to see you. I hope I'll see you for Reader's Fest and, you know, get to walk around
Absolutely.
With you before you do your thing. Yeah, I'll look forward to it. Thanks,
Perfect.
Deb. Have a good night. All righty.
You too. Thanks,
good night.
Pam. Take care.
Sure thing.
Good night.
Bye. And thanks for being with me tonight. Go pick up a Deborah Coon's book. You'll love it. I thank you for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night, all.